Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a great service department that backs it all up every step of the way with fabulous technicians. Last night, no Joel Embiid, no problem. As James Harden reverted to the days of the Houston Rockets with brilliant plays like this.
Here comes the finale of game one. Harden with it. 15 seconds to go. Horford has him out top. James with a dribble. Harden one-on-one. 9 seconds on the shot clock. Harden for three. Shot up. It's good. Harden made a triple. The Sixers go up by two. 8 seconds to go. Boston takes time. Sixers 117. Celtics 115.
You, sir, are my hero.
Tom McGinnis with the call. Oh, jeez. Tom McGinnis with the call on the Sixers Radio Network always does a great job. The gold standard in basketball, and especially in the NBA, is if you can hit 1.5 points per shot in a game. You do that, you have been phenomenal. Last night, Harden had 45 points. He did it on 30 shots. 1.5 points per shot. All right, let's bring in Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing great. It's great to hear your voice, by the way.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long, as far as I'm concerned. General impressions. This April's always interesting between spring football, the blue-white scrimmage, and now with the transfer portal, which came to a close on Sunday. You may get a trickle out because of the 48-hour thing maybe today, but... what's just your general thought of where the program is?
I think they're in great shape. I think anybody would and should say that. I thought the blue-white game, one thing that really interested me is I thought, you know, not only was it a legitimate game format, but I think it was a legitimate game for a guy like Drew Aller to go out there and have to face some of those defensive schemes that he saw. They came after him, and a pretty good offensive line had some issues with some defensive ends who had a good game and a coming out party. And that's a position of strength for Penn State, and I think that's going to be good for Aller, because I mean, you could argue that how many defenses is he going to see this year that are as good as the one he saw in the blue white game? Probably not too many. I mean, maybe five or six, but yeah, it's going to be fun to see him progress this year, and I think, you know, Penn State's got a lot of depth now on certain positions on defense. Certainly, they need to improve in some areas, but that's every team this time of year. So I think this coming out of the blue-white game, they know now what they need to fix. And, you know, look, I mean, are they going to be able to do it through the transfer portal? Are they going to have to develop those guys this summer? Probably a little bit of both. Probably more develop those guys that they have on the roster. But I think in the blue-white game, we saw some guys who – didn't get too many people talking about them. You know, Denai Dennis Sutton, Zariah Fisher. I thought, you know, both those guys played very well. And I think moving forward that, there's enough hope with those young guys to think that with what Penn State has, they could be pretty good in the fall.
Now the portal there, James Franklin and his staff have done really an outstanding job over the years of filling what they perceive to be as maybe a gap here or there. What are the those potential one or two gaps that could help them out in the portal?
Yeah, I think they've been as good as anybody in the portal, really. I mean, outside of just going and getting everybody that the, that you could find and being, you know, the, a program that, that is going to just, you know, build teams for the portal. They're not going to do that. But you know, I think if you're looking at positions, you know, James mentioned defensive tackle. You can go find a couple of guys there and help build that rotation there. But the receiver is another spot that he's mentioned going out and getting. That's a tough one for me because I think you have so many guys on your roster, and I think some of them could play, and some of them, you know, what Amari Evans did in the Blue White game didn't surprise me. You know, they really talked highly of him, and Taylor Stubblefield, when he was the receivers coach last year, I asked him about Evans, and he basically said, you know, it's just going to take him a little bit of time. He was a high school quarterback. Everybody right. knows kind of the backstory there, but I think he came out and played well. But I thought Saunders played well too, and that was important.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Yeah, the James kind of mentioning receiver. I think that I don't want to say that's a luxury at this point because he knows, he sees him every day. But I think that they can get by with what they've got at receiver. I think whenever you can get better in the trenches, you get better in the trenches. So get some defensive linemen if you can. Maybe an offensive lineman if the right guy is there. And that's kind of the guys they've been offering. But, not many people ever mention special teams. I'd see what I can get there as far as kickers. I don't know about the punting situation. I think Thompson, he evidently had a 62-yarder in the Blue White game. I don't remember it, but that doesn't surprise me that I don't remember a punt from a game. But I think they're going to have to get better on special teams. That's one thing we learned out of the Blue White game too. So maybe they hit that in the portal. But really, right now, I would think, you know, get better in the trenches if you can, and I think they'll do that and see what they could hit from there.
The what's interesting is the college football playoff announced today the dates and what they're doing. They announced today that, you know, once they get to the 24 season, first round games will be at campus sites on Friday, December 20th, one game, and then three games on Saturday, the 21st. The quarterfinals, the Fiesta Bowl, will be on the 31st and 24. Then New Year's Day, it'll be the Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl. Semifinals will be the Orange and Cotton on the 9th on a Thursday, and Monday night, the 20th, in Atlanta is the championship game. Then in 25, it's Friday the 19th, Saturday the 20th. Quarterfinals will be Wednesday the 31st at the Cotton Bowl, Thursday the 1st, Orange, Rose, Sugar. Semifinals on the 8th, Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl, because they're going to keep that rotation. And then the 20th of January in Miami will be the championship game. Now we're going to see the college football season end on January 20th.
Yeah, it's late. it's almost as long as a college or as a NFL season. If you want to, you're really pushing the conference championship games. Really, by the time you're wrapping up, it's a long season. And I mean, I get it. It's a long season for what, four teams? Realistically, so it's a shorter season, I guess, for most of the teams. You know, if you know, depending on what the rest of the bowl structure is going to look like, and four of the 12 teams are going to be eliminated that first weekend.
Right.
So I mean, I'm sure their season ends that way. But yeah, it's going to be a long football season. And the other thing I find interesting is you're playing how many of your games there? Six of your biggest games of the year aren't on Saturdays. And most of them are midweek.
And now, again,
I want to see how that plays out.
And again, that's the NFL. The NFL has forced them to do this.
Yeah, and the other side of that coin is, I sit here complaining that they don't have a lot of college football games on Saturdays, but that first weekend where you're playing those three games, the early afternoon, late afternoon, and primetime game in the first round, that's going to go up against NFL games.
Yes.
So it's going to be very fun to see how those ratings go.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, too, because what I find interesting is that, look, the NFL acts like they don't need anybody. And maybe in reality they don't. But I think they do need college football. And the reason they need it is Bryce Young's already, quote, an established star coming into the league. The NFL doesn't have to mold him into a star. College football does that for them.
Yeah, correct. I mean, look at last weekend. Look at the draft. I mean, it's the best minor league system in the world, and it's not really even a minor league system. You look at it, and people are tuning in from Thursday night until late Saturday afternoon for the draft to see these guys get picked, and they know most of them. They do scouting reports on them. They watch the combine to see these guys. Fans don't get enough football, and I think the lines for fans are blurred between college and the professional ranks. And they're going to continue to get even blurrier for obvious reasons. But really, yeah, this is, you know, Bryce Young last year was playing most of the year for Alabama, but you know, how many NFL teams wanted him? How many NFL fans are thinking that guy could change our fortunes? And that is part of the lure of college football now, that's somebody who you heard the tank for Tua stuff a couple of years ago. Ridiculous as that is, that's a lot of the reason why NFL fans are watching college football now is how could these guys help me?
On the world famous speaking tour, the stop this weekend was in South Carolina. 2/3 of my questions from the audience dealt with either the transfer portal or more with NIL. Mm-hmm. Donnie, what kind of feel do you have for NIL?
It's a great question. I do a podcast every week now, and I have people come every week to a certain degree. We talk about NIL, and every week I mention the same thing. I don't know anything. I know what it's about. I know what it is. I know the impact it's going to have, and I guess that's a lot when you see what kids are getting now, what they're expecting, but. You know, once you learn something about NIL, it changes 3 weeks later. So it's very difficult to kind of get the grasp on it. And I think it's difficult for fans, which is why you get a lot of questions about it. I get every once in a while, what are they paying Drew Aller this year? I don't know. I know that Drew Aller can go and make a nice living being Drew Aller if he can. But I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is. And there's a lot of misconceptions about what it's going to be, but it's going to change everything, and it already has, obviously, and that's why James is, 90% of what he does now is pound the table for what this means for his program.
Yeah, no, and people are asking because they want to know, and I know that Penn State has been as high as 3rd in endowed scholarships. And I said, I don't know, maybe you need to shift over to NIL because of the current. And look, you and I both know, everybody thinks everybody's making a lot of money. A few guys are. Most of the guys are like, oh, great, I get to go over to the local restaurant, and they're going to give me a little bit of money to sit there and sign autographs. I'll go.
Yeah.
That's what most of it is.
Yeah, it's NIL to me, it's not, the star basketball, what's her name at LSU, who got the Mercedes deal over the weekend.
Angel
Reese.
It's Don
DeLuca gets to go to Garrity's and sell some pasta sauce.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. And last year in Scranton, they had over the summer, and I think this is a really good example of what NIL could be. Sean Clifford and his with Limitless and those guys, he had a whole group of Penn State players come up. Jair Brown was there, DeLuca, Curtis Jacobs was there, Parker. But they did a big camp. Hundreds of kids showed up, and it was free, and they did this big camp for everybody. It was a really positive experience, and a lot of those guys are in the NFL now. Parker's in the NFL. Cliff is, Cliff with the Packers. And it was just this great event, and I was there. My kids went to it, and I thought, this is something they would not have been able to do 5 years ago.
Right.
And,
right, and they do that.
It does enable kids to, when you think about it, like Sean Clifford couldn't run a camp because it was against the rules.
Right. And now they can do that. And if Old Forge Pizza wants to bring some guys up, they're like, hey, great, I'll go. I'll go.
It is funny because there's still some rules that I didn't. You learn something new about it every day because I was talking earlier with Mike Rossigno from the Scranton chapter, and Mike, you're going to be up for the,
sure,
the dinner, I guess, in June. But
yes,
I said, because they were looking for speakers, and I said, why don't you just pay one of the players? And they still can't pay the players.
That's right.
Still
they can't
the
do
rules
it.
For them.
It's against the rules. They can't do it.
Yeah, so I don't know who could pay what and why, and I think they just change every week. So there's some really good things about it, is what I know, and it's great for the players, but the rules to me still very confusing.
Yeah, so that means you're stuck with Mike Rhodes and me. So that's what it ends up being on June the 8th. Right.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it. But, it's always a fun dinner. But I've never met Mike Rhodes, obviously. So
you'll like him, Donnie. He's an impressive guy. He's just a good down to earth guy. You'll like him a lot. He's our kind of guy.
Yeah, I've heard too that he was an outstanding Division III basketball player. The people at the University of Scranton say they've seen him and they remember him as almost legendary at that level.
Yeah, oh yeah, and with Lebanon Valley with Pat Flannery as the coach. And was it to be the Scranton Royals?
Yes.
Ah, the University of Scranton Royals.
Yeah, I remember Martelli played there for 2 years.
Yeah, Mike, 2 years up there. They were like the big deal all the time. Everybody talked about it. In fact, I'm going to be up in the old Lehman campus on Friday, as a matter of fact, so... Looking forward to it. Yeah. It's commencement weekend, and my buddy Rick Berry is giving the commencement speech, so they wanted to do something. So I said, okay, cool, I'll go. What the heck? No games this weekend. I'm good.
Yeah.
And I'm free for podcasts. And I'm free for podcasts too, Donnie. So we're all good.
Yeah.
All right. Donnie, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Next half hour, we'll have a fun announcement for you. And then Matt, who is, I guess his blood pressure is about 170 over 210 right now, is going to get it back down into what most doctors and physicians would consider a normal range by letting off some steam as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Next half hour, and Matt doing what Matt does. Yeah. It sounds like you're ready to really lay in and go to town. So, just seems that way.
On this next particular topic, yes.
Okay. Well, hey, by the way, the 21st century, of which we are living in now, has been very kind to the sports fans in the city of Boston. 6 Super Bowls with the Patriots, 4 World Series with the Red Sox. Celtics won a title in 8, made the finals last year. Bruins won the title in 11, made the finals in 19. Well, after all of that great run, they are in a world of hurt, where now they feel like the rest of the country has felt. When Boston first won, like the first Super Bowl, everybody up there was so overjoyed because nobody ever thought they'd win. After the Red Sox won in 2004, they were just overjoyed. I mean, you're talking about tears. You're talking about people going to cemeteries and bringing a hat or a ball to lay on their father or grandfather's grave because 86 years. Since then, since they've been winning more and more and more, they've gone from being really grateful to being in some ways insufferable. And so, yeah, this is, they finally hit that lull that other cities experience on a year in and year out basis.
Exactly. I hope they enjoy all of it.
When's the last time you won?
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with that all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. Great service department, terrific technicians that take care of the life of the vehicle, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. As promised, a fun announcement. I have two of them here. Let's see. This one deals with the Suits retirement. Is that the one?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Well, then this segment isn't as much fun as I thought it was going to be.
At least not that I've been told.
No, he's not. And I hope he doesn't. We need him. He does a great job. Here's what we're going to do. This is going to be a fun announcement for us. Penn State football is going to move to Eagle 107 starting this season. And the reason it's going to Eagle 107 starting this season is strength of schedule, clarity that FM is just has such great clarity to it, the strength of signal in night games especially. And with this NBC deal, there is a possibility of more night games being on the schedule for Penn State football. Starting this season, Penn State basketball will continue on WKOK 1070, as will the Thursday talk show with Coach Franklin and now with Mike Rhodes that will run from this year. It's going to be August 31st all the way till I think something like March 8th or 9th. And then, of course, there's one before the Blue White game in April. But WKOK will continue to air Penn State basketball. And the talk show on Thursday night, Eagle 107 will now be the new home for Penn State football here in the Valley.
Bingo!
You sure I can't read this suit thing? I wrote it myself.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit.
I mean, there's a part in here where I get emotional. Right, I even wrote it in here. Try not to act too happy. I love him. He's like a brother to me. So, but there you go. Eagle 107, Penn State football. Quite the combination. And we're keeping Penn State basketball on the talk show here on 1070 WKOK. All right, now that we've navigated joy with a little sense of humor in there, let's bring the show back to the dark side, into the abyss.
And also, just in case anybody doesn't know, Eagle 107 is 107.3 FM. If you're listening on the dial around here. But there's that.
Yes.
But now I need to go over to the Florida Panthers management here, who aren't about fun at all. I guess, especially if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. Now, I get there's some gamesmanship to this, I guess, but this also shows one thing of your fraudulent fan base yet again down there in South Florida when it comes to professional sports. I don't know if you guys heard on CBS News, actually did a story on this right before we started the show today, that the Panthers are only allowing U.S. citizens to buy tickets for the series upcoming against the Maple Leafs. So if you're coming in from Canada, if you want to make the long, long trip from Toronto to Sunrise, Florida, you cannot buy a ticket unless it's resale, which, of course, would be more expensive. And well, I call big time foul on that.
To be honest with you, that story was out yesterday morning. It's typical CBS News. They're usually a day late, dollar short. To be honest with you, that story is actually 36 hours old.
Regardless, it is once again a Florida franchise, professional sports franchise,
but
having to buckle up to their fraudulent fan base down there.
But I'll be honest with you, this goes back, I've talked about this many times, Matt. It's becoming a problem almost everywhere in sports of opposing team fan bases coming in and invading and getting tickets and making the home arena sound like, let's take it really close to home. Like, we all know how much Dick and Milton loves the Orioles. The Orioles do not have a home field advantage. Every time I've gone to a game down there, and I've gone down there when 98% of the time it's been the Red Sox, right? The place sounds like Fenway Park.
Yeah, it's the same with the Yankees, too, and when the Phillies go down there, right?
And look, and we could talk about the Cowboys being America's team and so forth. A lot of opposing teams' fan bases buy tickets to Cowboys games. I remember talking with Mark Vandermeer, who's the Houston Texans play-by-play guy, and I was listening to a Texans Cowboys game on the radio on Sirius driving around, and they were commenting on the broadcast about how many fans were there. So I called him up on Monday. I said, geez, you guys had a great turnout. He said, Steve, half the fans in the building were Houston Texan fans. I mean, that's the way it is. That's why the Chargers forever. I mean, yeah, ever since they went to Los Angeles, when they were in Carson, which Jackie and I were standing down in Carson for the Rose Bowl practices, and we're looking up and I said, an NFL team played there?
That was pretty pathetic.
Right? Well, it's all they could do.
Yes.
It's the only option they had. They couldn't play in the Coliseum. And left and right, opposing fans are buying their tickets. It happens to the Rays all the time. It's happening in a lot of venues across the country. There are very few. I mean, believe me, there are a lot of Yankee fans that buy Red Sox tickets. And there are a lot of Red Sox fans that buy Yankee tickets. But to be honest with you, one of the few so far that's been somewhat immune has been Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia's been pretty good about, like, Eagles, Phillies, right, Sixers. Well, the Flyers don't have any more fans.
I was about to say, you can keep the Flyers out of this conversation because they're on a different level and they stink.
But a lot of people from opposing teams are now buying Flyers tickets.
They
know it's a way to do it. But for the most part, Philadelphia's been pretty immune to it. But that's becoming a trend across the country where you have... I'll tell you where it really started, right? Believe it or not, Notre Dame football. Nebraska played a game at Notre Dame, and the Notre Dame fans left and right sold their tickets to the Nebraska fans, and they had like 35,000 Nebraska fans in that stadium for the game. This is a few years ago. That's where it started, where now you started having managements, whether it's on the college side or the pro side, doing everything. They looking around saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. We got to somehow like keep our fans in the building so it's our home field, home court, home ice.
Yeah, I get it.
This is happening everywhere.
It is, but this has already happened in this parts of the country, specifically Florida.
But it is
even before all this happened.
But it's happened in Arizona and Florida in particular because people have moved there. So in other words, say you and Lisa decide, okay, you want let's after a career in radio, TV, and everything like that, you get to be. And you're like around 60 or whatever, and you decide that you've done well and you're going to retire, and the two of you love sunshine, you move to Florida, right? Are you going to stop being a Yankees, Phillies, and Sixers fan because you moved to Florida?
No.
Right.
Not.
And that's exactly what has happened here. There are so many transplants that live in Arizona and in Florida because of the weather, because of the sunshine, everything. But they don't give up their fandom. I just spoke down at Hilton Head to the Penn State Club of the Low Country. Every single one of them is a retiree who is a transplant from someplace else, but they're all still deep Penn State fans. And they're telling me that down there, there's also a large segment of Ohio State fans. They aren't Clemson fans. They aren't University of South Carolina fans. They're Penn State and Ohio State fans. And that's what's happening. More and more people are moving. They're moving south. So it's great for that's why you're seeing every league has been, when they've expanded, they've gone in that direction. Let the NHL, let's put a team in Nashville. Let's put a team in Tampa. Let's put a team outside of Miami. Let's go to Dallas. You know, let's go to Vegas. I mean, they're going, you know, let's put a team, you know, that's, you know, the Winnipeg Jets are going to move, so they move to Phoenix. Then they took Atlanta and moved them up to Winnipeg. That's who they are now. But that's what's happening. That's where the population shift has been. But these, you know, the number of Yankee fans that live in the Tampa area, there are more Yankee fans that live in Tampa than there are Rays fans. And it's great for the leagues to put these teams in these areas because of the population shift, and they're trying to take advantage of it. And it's also something they can sell to TV networks and negotiations where they're saying, hey, look, we got a team in Miami, got a team in Tampa. You know, the NFL could say they have a team in Jacksonville. I mean, you know, we got Florida all locked up. You know, and that's part of the negotiation when they're doing this. Because when people move there, they don't change their allegiances. They don't sit there and go, hey, I now live in St. Petersburg. I'm a Rays fan. No, you're not. You're a Yankee fan. I mean, you wouldn't change your allegiance, yet you're going to be critical of somebody else down there that does.
Well, it's just like I'm speaking more to the people that are lifelong residents down there. So if you're a lifelong Tampa resident, you're a lifelong Miami area region type resident, and especially when the teams have been good lately, like the Rays have been and like the Panthers have been, and you still can't fill the arena, I think that's a problem. And we've talked about this with the Rays before. Now, part of it is because they play in a crapshoot of a stadium in a poor area in St. Petersburg. I get that. So I'm not asking the people that move down there to change teams. You should stick with your teams. I'm saying for the lifelong residents that have been down there in those areas that don't show up or sell their tickets to a visiting fan or whoever else is coming in, that's where my problem lies.
Well, for one thing, the tickets are really expensive, all right, when it comes to certain events. And my guess would be that many of these people will get their season tickets or whatever, and they'll say, okay, they're going to play 9 home games this year. So let's just take an NFL example. I've got 9 sets of season tickets that go to see the Tampa Bay Bucks, right? But you know what? I'm kind of looking at it, and I think I can make 7 of the games. I'm going to sell the other 2 games. And guess what? Get the money back, either do whatever I got to do on a particular weekend or whatever, or else I'll kind of roll it toward next year's season ticket, something.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that happen before, and right. That's fine. I'm more, this is more about the playoff games, too, though. than anything else.
Yeah.
When you can't fill your arena or your stadium for a playoff game, that's really where the major problem is right now.
Well, for one thing, in this round, how many people do you think for the Florida Panthers bought tickets for the second round?
Oh, it's a valid point.
I mean, they're playing the Bruins. Now, even though you could tell after the first two games that this was going to be one that goes to the limit, I didn't expect the Bruins to lose in Game 7. Especially, you know, let's face it, they led the last game with a minute to go. Nobody really expected the Florida Panthers to advance. So I'm sure tickets for the second round were plentiful. How about that? Now, you're a Toronto fan, right? Here's the issue you got, you know, the second issue you have with that. Toronto hasn't advanced since 2004. Their fans are so overjoyed by this. And Toronto, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, that was Canada's, and along with the Canadians, those are the two entitled fan bases in all of Canada for decades. The Leafs haven't won anything since 67, and they haven't even won a playoff round since 2004. You're talking, this has now been 19 years since they advanced. So needless to say, the bandwagon has a lot of people spraining ankles up there in Toronto to get to it, and they want to go down and see the games. And now you've got an organization down in Broward County saying, oh, God, here they come. And it is an issue. I mean, I don't blame the Fred. Like, hey, look, we got to sell to our fans. And I don't blame them. Because it's a bad combination. It's not as if you're sitting there and you've got tickets and they're available and it's the Carolina Hurricanes. Okay. Well, I've got tickets, but now it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. About as rabid a fan base as there is in sports. I've got a problem. Don't you think?
In this case, yeah, but I don't know. I still feel like that falls back on them, and they shouldn't punish the visiting fan bases for trying to come in.
Okay, but you've got a hockey team in Broward County, okay, down near Miami, in an area that has 1,000 things to do. Right? The Dolphins do not sell out every game. Right?
Yeah, they've really struggled, too. I mean, they've also stunk for a majority of the time, but yeah.
Right. But in the heat, okay? And the Marlins struggle attendance-wise. Matt, part of it is that, yeah, we could talk about the performance of the teams, but, Matt, it's an area of the world that has a lot to do. You want to go out play golf? Great. You want to go play tennis? Great. You want to go play pickleball? Great. You want to go to the beach? Great. I mean, and you could do all these things in January and February. Right? It's just a different part of the world to live in that brings with it more challenges for sports teams that are down there.
Well, let me give you this in terms of down there where I really started to turn on the South Florida Southern fan base in general. Is that when the Heat fans...
By the way, just everybody, again, it's Matt Cotrillo at WKOK.com. Everybody, okay? And if you could do, if at all possible, if you could leave my name out of it, that'd be great. Go ahead, please continue.
I forget which NBA final series it was. I think it was when LeBron was still there. So let's say either 2010 or 2011, somewhere in that range. The Heat were losing big time to whoever it was, either, I guess, the Thunder or Mavs, whatever. And they came back, they were coming back, and then they eventually won the playoff game. Well, half the arena was empty, but then you saw camera shots of fans trying to get back into the arena, but they can't because they don't have the re-entry. You have the no re-entry policy. Well, guess what? You should have stuck it out, Miami fans. So that was when I started to see, I thought the fan base down there started to show their true colors. Because you're right, I guess there is other stuff to do, plenty of other stuff to do in South Florida, I get it. But especially when it comes to playoff time, you got to stick with your team.
Again, there's a lot more to this than, I really want to, I'm taking the side of the fans here. And there's a reason for it. Okay, first of all, you pay a lot of money to get the tickets. You also pay a lot to park. And guess what? And we were talking about this today about parking at Beaver Stadium. Somebody brought this up, and I said, there are always going to be, those that complain about the parking situation here. But, I'm somebody that goes to other places. You have no idea how good it is here. Other places, it's not easy to park. Sometimes it's not close to park. It's not convenient to park. I mean, it's a problem. I mean, it is a problem. And that is something that, you get to the game, it looks like they're out of it. They're done. That's it. You know what? I'm going to beat the traffic. I got to go home. And I do think it's an issue. Not everybody has your situation. You park right up next to the stadium. You've got the honorary coach parking. I know how it works. I understand. All right, so let me give you... The Panthers are not last, by the way, in attendance, just so you know.
Let me guess, it's the Coyotes?
Well, they has to be, because they only play in a 6,000-seat arena.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they moved into that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Panthers' winning ways, it says here in the article, have caused an increase in both interest, in-game attendance, and TV ratings, which is... that's a nice story. I mean, they've got some success. They're doing well. The Panthers have seen increased ratings on Bally Sports. They are tracking to top 650,000 total spectators for only the third time in the history of the franchise. And TV ratings are up for them 10%. So look, they're winning and they've built some fans down there. And let's give some credit where credit is due for what they're doing down there. But they are not last in the NHL. I think they're somewhere around 22 or something like that. Attendance area, they're over 15,000 a game. How about that? Okay, so there you go. I mean, and they just hosted the NHL All-Star Game, and it went really well down there for them. Roberto Luongo says there are a long list of veterans in the twilight of their careers who retired in the Florida Sun for a chance to win the Cup and help younger players develop. He says the issue is they ended up in Sunrise, Florida, which is a suburb. The difference to Sunrise for many southern Floridians is quite far. The local traffic through Dade and Broward counties takes me almost as long to drive round trip than it did to watch the game itself, including overtime. The closest activity with passable action is Sawgrass Mills Mall, an outlet center, a tough place to find parking and an easy place to get lost. And they also say Sunrise is too far away for a hockey arena. They said maybe a Miami Dolphins town, but good luck converting football fans to hockey fans when people need to drive over an hour to see a home game. Also, the team doubled prices from pre-COVID and charges $20 to park. But again, look where Tampa's arena is. Now, we talked about the Rays. Look where Tampa's arena is, downtown. Right? Okay? The Panthers do not play in downtown. They play in Sunrise, and like I said, it takes an hour for the average Miami fan to get there. And they're playing to 85% of capacity. They are playing to 85% of capacity. But they also strategically schedule Canadian teams down there during the December break, because it allows them to sell more tickets to the snowbird crowd. And they say when the Toronto Maple Leafs or any of the other original six teams come to town, more than half the crowd happens to be for the opposing team. It's just the way it is. And it's not like the Panthers aren't a good team. They are a good team. Real estate, to quote Lisa Barrick, location, location, location. Lisa, you didn't know you'd make the show, did you? Panthers averaged 16,682 this year.